Johnson Rapids, 1320 AM and W248 DE, broadcasting at 97.5 FM.
News talk and sports on both sides of the dial from Wisconsin Rapids and beyond. Locally grown radio, 97.5 FM and WFHR, 1320 AM.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by Rocket Mortgage.
I'm Steve Kathan. Arguments before the U.S. Supreme Court this morning in a case about gay rights and free speech.
You are announcing a wedding, and if you believe the wedding to be false, then the government would be compelling you to say something that you otherwise wouldn't say.
The attorney for a Colorado designer who's refused to take on same-sex clients, citing religious views, State Solicitor General Eric Olson.
A company can choose to sell websites that only feature biblical quotes describing a marriage as between a man and a woman. Just like a Christmas store can choose to sell only Christmas-related items, the company just cannot refuse to serve gay couples, just as the Christmas store cannot announce no Jews allowed.
The FBI is involved in the investigation into a stunning case of vandalism.
Tens of thousands could be without power and heat most of this week in Moore County, North Carolina, southwest of Raleigh, after two power substations were damaged by gunfire. Sheriff Ronnie Fields.
Cowardly is what I'd call it. No motivation. Nobody's, no group has stepped up to acknowledge or accept it. They're the ones that done it. So, yeah, I call them cowards.
Authorities are investigating the incident as a criminal act. Schools in the area are closed today. Jim Crisula, CBS News, Greensboro, North Carolina.
Pfizer is asking federal regulators to authorize its updated COVID-19 vaccine for children under age 5, not as a booster, but as part of their initial shots. It's the final push in Georgia, tomorrow's election day in the U.S. Senate runoff. CBS's Nicole Killian.
More than a quarter of active voters in the state have already cast their ballot, so the focus is really on driving turnout election day, but there's real concern since the forecast is calling for heavy rain today and tomorrow. Both campaigns are urging voters not to let the weather deter them.
Overseas, Vladimir Putin drove over the repaired bridge connecting Russia to Crimea. A bombing 2 months ago crippled it, and Moscow has stepped up attacks in Ukraine.
The Ukrainians are calling it a massive coordinated missile attack on homes and energy infrastructure. The strikes have caused power cuts across much of the country, and the city of Odessa is without water. The Russians apparently hoping to decimate Ukraine's energy infrastructure as the freezing winter weather deepens. Vicky Barker, CBS News, London.
The police chief in Tampa, Florida, resigned today for using her position to escape a ticket during a traffic stop involving a golf cart driven by her husband. An internal affairs review found Mary O'Connor violated police department policy. Checking Wall Street right now, stocks are slipping. The Dow is down 405 points. The NASDAQ is down 180. The S&P is down 80. This is CBS News.
This hour's newscast is presented by Rocket Mortgage. Need to know what it takes for a home loan to fit your budget and your family? Rocket can.
Let's see, if something costs less, but people are happier with it, that sounds like something to look into, and that's MediShare. Maybe you've heard switching to MediShare to pay for healthcare can save the typical family $500 a month, and that's huge, but it's also true that people are way more satisfied after making the switch, too. The customer satisfaction rate for MediShare is double that of the typical health insurance plan. Double. MediShare works. It's been around for more than a quarter century, and members have shared more than $3 billion of each other's bills. People love having telehealth and a huge nationwide PPO network. So, yeah, you can save a ton and like it better. Imagine being happy with how you're taking care of your health care. So if you're self-employed or part of the gig economy, or you just want a plan you're happy with, you can call right now and get a price within 2 minutes. Very, very smart use of 2 minutes. Here's the number you need. 866-88-BIBLE. That's 866-88-BIBLE. 866-88-BIBLE.
As a farmer, you make a lot of important decisions that impact the profitability of your operation. When considering your crop insurance options for the 2023 growing season, turn to Ag Country Farm Credit Services. The insurance team at Ag Country knows agriculture, and they'll work to personalize a multi-peril crop insurance policy to fit your needs and protect your bottom line. Contact Ag Country today to get started. Ag Country, focused on ag, focused on you.
For Civic Media, I'm Melissa Kay with your local news update. The DNR is reminding the public to practice ice safety on Wisconsin lakes and rivers and remember that no ice is safe ice. Early season ice is thin, weak, and potentially life-threatening. The DNR does not monitor ice conditions. You should check with your local fishing clubs, bait shops, or outfitters for ice conditions. Be sure to carry a cell phone and let people know where you are going and when you will return home. For a full list of DNR's ice safety recommendations, visit dnr.wisconsin.gov. Members of the Wausau Fire Department were training on Friday to improve their skills rescuing people from icy waters. The training took place at DC Everest Park on Lake Wausau. They were wearing cold water suits and had to bring a colleague back to safety in less than 10 minutes. This is the time frame a person can be in icy water before they start to have serious medical complications. The simulated event helps firefighters keep their skills sharp. And that's the news on your locally grown radio station.
Here's your forecast from locally grown radio WFHR. 35 this afternoon, under overcast skies, northwest winds 8 to 15 miles per hour. Overcast skies, tonight, lows level off around 15. Cloudy, tomorrow, chance of snow, high temperatures reach up to 31. Highs around 33, Wednesday, under partly cloudy skies, 34, Thursday. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki. Currently, it's 34.
Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin. Thanks for joining us today during your lunch hour. As always, you can join the conversation at 844-967-2789. So last week, my mom was supposed to do a girls' trip with her four best friends. And they were going to go to Cedarburg. And the day before they're supposed to go, one of the friends had to report that at their Thanksgiving big family event, over half of the people who were there had either influenza, COVID, or RSV when they were all together. And the friend said, do you want me to come? As a very thoughtful way of saying, do we want to spend this time together? I feel fine right now, but the likelihood that I am carrying something now is very high. And so they unfortunately canceled their trip. But it was a reminder that right now there is a triple threat of so many viruses running around, whether it's influenza, RSV, and COVID, and so apparently at higher levels than we typically see this time of year. So to walk us through it is President and CEO of the Medical College of Wisconsin, Dr. John Raymond. Welcome to the show, Dr. Raymond.
Yeah, thank you, Kristen. Glad to be here.
So I feel like for a month or so now, we've been seeing so many kids are sick. Hospitals are starting to run out, especially because they're respiratory viruses. And so where are we right now in Wisconsin as far as how either overloaded hospitals are, but how many cases we're seeing, and is this abnormal?
What we're facing right now is not typical. We have a steady but high level of COVID with a manageable number of hospitalizations. But when you superimpose on that a rapidly rising early flu season and an earlier than usual and more severe respiratory syncytial virus season, both pediatric and adult hospitals are filling up with people that have respiratory symptoms. These are three very different viruses, but they manifest in very similar ways. Okay. Cough, fever, constitutional symptoms, and in some cases, severe problems with shortness of breath. That COVID predominantly now is affecting people over the age of 70. There's been a threefold increase in hospitalizations in California and New Mexico, so we expect that there probably will be something similar happening here. RSV may have peaked, but it is a very significant respiratory virus that affects the elderly and kids. And flu, obviously, is just starting to peak now, or starting to rise now.
And so, do they all spread in the same way?
Essentially, yes, Kristen. Okay. So these viruses, even though they have similar symptoms, they may have different physiologies, but they spread in the same way. So respiratory spread is the most common, but also spread through contact on touch surfaces can happen, especially with flu and RSV, a respiratory syncytial virus. So the things that we recommend people do, other than staying away from people that are obviously sick or if you're sick, staying away from other folks, is to wash your hands, socially distance, or wear a mask if you're around vulnerable people. And for all three viruses, the elderly are vulnerable. People that have immunocompromised, maybe from cancer or from rheumatological diseases, also are at high risk. And then for flu and RSV, kids also are very susceptible.
And so what is it, because is if for kids, is it more likely going to be influenza than RSV because, like you said, the COVID is still predominantly affecting older people?
Yeah, COVID is infecting everybody, but the disease manifestations are more severe in older
people. Okay.
Kids are still getting infected with COVID. Just looking at the hospital censuses, there's about five times more kids hospitalized with RSV right now than with COVID, and maybe twice as many with rhinovirus as with COVID. So we still have some COVID, but some of these other viruses are causing more hospitalizations in kids.
We're talking to Dr. Raymond, who is the CEO and president of the Medical College of Wisconsin, about the mixed bag of influenza, RSV, and COVID. And so obviously this is also on top of shortages in hospitals. And so how are different hospitals being able to manage this uptick in cases? And I guess even more importantly, knowing that there is a shortage of workers, at what point would you advise people that the symptoms are severe enough to go to the hospital versus what can be done at home?
Right. Well, obviously you want to consult with your doctor, but if a child or an adult is short of breath, if they have a high fever, if they're very profoundly weak, then obviously they need to be seen. And typically that would either be in an urgent care or an emergency department. So I wouldn't change the way that the threshold that people have for seeking medical help. But we do want to do everything we can, not just to protect each other, but to make sure that our hospitals don't get overwhelmed. So the usual things that we've talked about, hand washing, socially distancing, avoiding interacting with sick people, protecting the vulnerable, those are things that we should be thinking about, especially around the holiday season. And we have seen a very significant spike in respiratory diseases that have happened within a week or so after Thanksgiving.
Dr. Raymond, I had a friend who was visiting from Texas a couple weeks before Thanksgiving, and she actually had influenza A. I didn't realize that there was an A and a B, and she was really, really sick.
Yeah, influenza A typically causes more significant symptoms, but there are two major strains, A and B, and the vaccines that we roll out every year are typically tailored to what the scientists believe would be the most likely strains of A and B that would be circulating.
And so as far as why we're kind of seeing all of this at the same time, is there any reason to think that it was because of the last 2 years around this time, it was only COVID? And is there a different immunity that's changed in when we were isolating versus when we're not? Or is there any kind of leading theories as to why all three of these things are so prevalent at the same time right now?
Right. Well, there's certainly a lot of theories about what masking and isolation may have done to immunity from non-COVID diseases. But I think the most likely thing that's happening here is people are tired of being apart, and they're mixing and intermingling with each other in normal ways, pre-pandemic ways. And that's just given these respiratory viruses an opportunity to spread maybe a little earlier and a little bit more severely than we would have in a typical season.
In some ways, it's almost like we have collective amnesia as far as what happened. And everyone was so good originally about stay home if you're sick, don't go to work. Work doesn't want you to come to work if you're sick. And I just think too, Dr. Raymond, it seems like we've all kind of forgotten about all of that.
Yeah, let's face it, people are tired of isolation, they're tired of wearing masks, they're tired of doing all these things to mitigate the risk of COVID. But these measures also work very well for other common viruses. And I don't think people understand, influenza in a bad season can kill 50,000 people in the U.S. Respiratory syncytial virus kills 14,000 adults every year and 500 kids. So these are still very significant problems. And this isn't really the time for us to go completely back to our pre-pandemic habits. A little bit of precaution is really warranted right now, especially with the cold weather and with people getting together for the holidays.
And so obviously, I would imagine that your recommendation beyond what you said, washing your hands, wearing a mask if you're not feeling well, socially distance, is getting vaccinated if you're not vaccinated, and boosters if you need boosters for both influenza and COVID. And I also, I'm assuming, because I haven't heard anything, there's not a vaccination for RSV.
That's right, Kristen. No vaccine for RSV yet. And yes, the vast majority of medical professionals are recommending that people get vaccinated, both for seasonal influenza and for COVID, especially if you're in a vulnerable population or you live or work with vulnerable people. So these new bivalent boosters for COVID do give what appears to be a stronger immunity to the new strains of the virus that are circulating, the Omicron variants that are more contagious. And especially if you're in a high-risk group, we are recommending that you receive a vaccination. But obviously, if you have concerns about vaccine safety, talk to your doctor.
What are our vaccination numbers in Wisconsin, Dr. Raymond?
They're lower than we'd like. They're at about 67% for people that have had at least one vaccine against COVID, and about 37% for people who have gotten one booster. So obviously not optimal. We'd like to see more people get vaccinated.
And so just as a reminder, as we get, people get sick. And so the, once you are sick, don't go to work, wash your hands, wear a mask. But as far as kind of that in-between level of when we get sick and it's not so bad that we are going to go to the hospital, does NyQuil work? Like for the over-the-counter stuff, when you are feeling bad as a doctor, what do you recommend to make yourself feel better with what we probably blanketly call a cold?
Like everybody else, I'll take an analgesic or a cold medicine if I want to feel better. So symptomatic management is good for these respiratory viruses. One of the problems is we are seeing some shortages of both over-the-counter and prescription medication associated with our disrupted supply chain.
Well, great.
I was hoping you were going to suggest a brandy hot toddy, but maybe that's just me.
That's all right. Home remedies are okay if they work for you.
Whatever you got to do to come to work, Jane. Well, is there any other advice you would give to people in our audience as far as what to look out for or how to stay healthy?
There are two things. If you are diagnosed with influenza early and you're in a high-risk group, you can be prescribed Tamiflu. It does reduce the symptoms and the severity of illness. And the same would go for COVID. We do have Paxlovid, which if you can take it early, does lower the risk of severe disease and lower the risk of death and hospitalization. So again, get diagnosed early and make yourself available for these medications that can prevent severe illness.
Well, that is great to hear. Thank you so much for spending time with us today. Our guest has been Dr. John Raymond, who is the CEO and president of the Medical College of Wisconsin. Thank you so much for joining us, and thank you for all that you do.
Thanks, Kristen. Thanks, Jane. Have a great day.
You too. All right. Well, we're going to take a short break, and when we come back, some more Twitter drama, because that seems never ending. This is As Goes Wisconsin.
I'm E.J. Williams. Each year, millions of animals are abandoned, and more than a million are euthanized before they can be rescued. Organizations like American Humane are working to harness the healing power of the human-animal bond, as animals can be trained as life-saving service and therapy dogs to help veterans, the elderly, and children with special needs to overcome the obstacles of everyday life. To find out how you can help give animals and the people they help a new leash on life, please visit AmericanHumane.org.
All right, class, let's hear what everyone did this weekend. Jill?
Well, I raised my older sister to a big oak tree. It was at least 100 years old. My mom said I must have set a record or something. And then we went down by a stream and perched up on this huge rock and saw all these little minnows swimming around way below us. And then I rescued my little brother from an evil slug king who was guarding him at the bush fortress. And my sister and I brought him back to our super twig fort for safety. And then we all laid out and told stories until it got dark. And the Big Dipper led us all the way home.
Whoa! Awesome!
Where were you, Jill?
Yeah. We went to the forest. It's not that far away. Anyone want to come this weekend?
Ask your parents to take you and your friends to the forest this week and find the fun, adventurous you. It's closer than you think. Check out discovertheforest.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
Ladies and gentlemen, children at heart and of all ages.
Start your day laughing with Mornings on WFHR.
7 to 10, Monday through Friday, join your host James and the best co-hosts in radio.
Keep up to date on local news, sports, and weather.
Along with Misty's Menu, Birthday and Anniversary Club, and Friday's Culver's Star of the Day.
Join the conversation weekdays 7 to 10 for Mornings on WFHR. We're a serious comedy to start your day.
Your place for this area's news, talk, and sports. We are locally grown radio, 97.5 FM and WFHR, 1320 AM.
Field's choice for news, talk, radio. Streaming 24/7 at waukradio.com.
When I was a little bitty boy, my grandmother bought me a cute little toy. Silver bells hanging on a string. She told me it was my ding-a-ling-a-ling-o.
Ding-a-ling! Ding-a-ling! Oh, she's playing my ding-a-ling!
Welcome back to Asgills, Wisconsin with Kristen Bry. Thank you for joining us during the lunch hour. As always, join the conversation, 844-967-2789. And a reminder, if you like our show, tell your friends.
Spread the word.
Spread the word. We are a growing show on a growing network of radio stations, and we can always use your help if you are an evangelist for us to tell more people that we're here every day, Monday through Friday. And follow us on social media, As Goes Wisconsin, and help us help you by getting more people to watch us. Good choice.
Why, thank you.
Both you hit both boxes as far as being topical for what we're going to talk about this segment, and also Christmassy.
Yes.
So I don't even know where to start on this. Were you following this on Friday night, James?
I was.
So you could maybe set it up better. I'll set up how my experience of how this went down. So we were out for the Third Ward Christmas lighting Friday night with friends. But of course, because I'm addicted to my phone, I passively was seeing tweets from Elon saying there was this big hype for a Friday night drop of the Twitter files.
Bombshell.
Cue X-Files music. Dun, dun, dun. And then as I kind of passively checked throughout the evening, there were certain people who seemed very vindicated. And there were certain people who were like, we already knew all of this. And since you followed much more closely, what did you find out?
So Twitter, in conjunction with a journalist called Matt Tabibi.
Tabby? So this is a journalist who, I think up until what I was reading, up until this kind of Friday night dump, was very respected. I mean, he has his own Substack. He has almost 1 million followers on Twitter, and he's a journalist. He's a reporter, investigative journalist. And somehow he got roped into being the deliverer of how, during the 2020 election, Hunter Biden and some stories and tweets and posts about him were handled by Twitter employees as far as content moderation and censoring of pornographic posts.
Right.
So go ahead.
So Tabibi, again, in conjunction with Twitter and following whatever parameters Twitter put on him, looked over these internal discussions about getting these pictures of Hunter Biden's schmeckle basically squashed. Now, Hunter Biden isn't a candidate.
He's not an elected official.
He's never been an elected official, nor a candidate. And apparently, the Trump administration had done some similar things in reaching out to Twitter, asking them to squash other things.
Well, it sounds like, in general, for people who work on campaigns and are career, you know, campaign managers or involved, and since the advent of social media, and I'm sure even prior to that, with the media in general, the conversations that happen between the people who are giving the news, whether that's reporting on it or being a platform for it to be reported on or things tweeted about, there is conversations that happen as far as, you know, negotiating what gets printed, what gets posted, what gets taken down. And this is not new as far as, you know, anyone who's ever watched, you know, the morning show on Apple, as far as if I give you a bigger story, will you kill this one and all of that. And so basically what it turned out was the tweet that got the most retweets was an internal email of the Biden campaign listing off different tweets that were mostly pornography, basically, as far as naked pictures of sexual acts and stuff like that, to a Twitter employee, and the Twitter employee writing back handled. And that was the big gotcha moment, to which Elon Musk said this is a violation of First Amendment rights, which, once again, we're back to the point of the First Amendment protects you from going to jail.
For speaking out against the government.
Yes. And it does not protect you or it give you the ability to post whatever you want on the internet. That is still left up to the platforms to decide how much content moderation they want to execute. If they want to, you know, their charter is to create an online platform that people want to be a part of. And so for their advertisers, for their majority of their users, do you want to scroll through and see unsolicited dick pics? I think most of us would not.
There's actually
laws that says we do not want this, and you can be charged for doing that.
Unless you follow Brett Favre. Sorry, I just had to throw that out there. From what I understand, Twitter is still a privately held company, is it not?
It's even more of a privately held company now, because before, at least, it was a public company, and now it's privately held by Elon.
And when this happened, these Hunter Biden picks, now President Biden had not yet been elected president.
No.
So this was not the Biden administration doing this. This was the Biden campaign doing this.
Yes, which are separate.
Which are separate.
Which in all of campaign for people who are currently, take a local example. So the team that was working for the governor, Tony Evers, in his office at the Capitol was separate from the people who were working on his campaign. So for elected officials, there are campaign laws that divide those two. And so you have your on-premise job that you are getting paid for that has nothing to do with campaigning. And then you have your team that is in charge of campaigning. And so, yes, it was the Biden campaign. He was not president. And to sum it up nicely, as far as what Tim Miller,
such a good piece
for The Bulwark, he was such a good writer. But his title for his piece on this is, "No, you do not have a constitutional right to post Hunter Biden's dick pic on Twitter." And I think that kind of sums up what this whole hullabaloo on Friday night on Twitter was. Which just is driving more people to be like, what am I doing here? It's, you know, the addiction to that bird app.
The story just kind of went limp.
You're tuned into your home for the Wisconsin Badgers on 97.5 FM and 1320 AM WFHR, locally grown radio.
Quality Foods puts you first. No self-checkouts here. Get the groceries you want, bagged and loaded in your car if you'd like. That's quality service from real people you can expect. Delivery and pickup are available at West Grand. Visit QualityFoodsWisRapids.com
Or if you can't order online, just call West Grand and they'll take it. Don't forget the deli for delicious meats, cheese, salads, and complete hot and cold meals. Quality Foods, West Grand and Baker Drive, locally owned and putting you and the community first.
Congratulations to the winners of the New Year's Day Green Bay Giveaway. The following individuals won a $50 gift card from the participating sponsors: Petra Inderdahl of Scandinavia from La Taqueria, Dave Colby of Wisconsin Rapids from Jennings & Company, Ken Hilgers of Nakusa from Piggly Wiggly, and Brenda Piotrowski of Adams from Hoozles at the Lakes. And the grand prize winner of two club tickets to the New Year's Day game, Dave Colby. WFHR and WIRI would like to thank all who participated, and especially our sponsors. Have a happy holiday season from Civic Media and local Grown Radio.
Lights, camera, action. It is time for your close-up with WFHR's Star of the Day featuring Culver's. Listen to WFHR every Friday morning at 8:30. We'll play a quote from a famous movie, name the actor, character, or movie, and you'll win two value baskets and two concrete mixers from the superstars at Culver's in Wisconsin Rapids. Join us Fridays to be WFHR's Star of the Day featuring Culver's.
Insulin. Penicillin, the heart transplant. All of these medical breakthroughs were thanks to research. Research made possible with the help of volunteers. That's where you come in. The All of Us Research Program is asking for people from across the U.S. to share their unique health information. Because the more data researchers have, the faster they can find the next health breakthrough. But there can be no breakthroughs without research, and there's no research without you. Learn more at joinallofus.org/WBA, sponsored by All of Us Wisconsin.
Using meth taught me everything about freedom, only not like you think. It taught me how easy it is to lose your freedom. If you think meth is taking control of you, ask for help. You have the power to be truly free. I know. I'm Jan, and I'm free from meth.
If you or someone you know is struggling with meth, call 1-800-662-HELP for 24-hour, free, and confidential treatment referral. Learn more at samhsa.gov/meth.
Hey, this is Jim Santel. I am the host of Morning Cannolis. Every single Saturday morning from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m., we talk about the major stories in law, in government, and the aspiration for justice in America. Delighted to have you join, call in, and be a part of our discussion right here on the networks of Civic Media.
For Civic Media, I'm Melissa Kay with your local news update. Former Milwaukee Elections Commission Deputy Director Kimberly Zapata made her initial court appearance on Friday, where she posted a $2,500 signature bond. She entered not guilty pleas to three misdemeanor counts of making a false statement to obtain an absentee ballot. She is also charged with misconduct in public office, which is a felony. Zapata is represented by an attorney from the Thomas More Society, a conservative law firm that assisted former state Supreme Court Justice Michael Gableman in his review of the 2020 election, which was funded by taxpayers. Zapata's next court appearance will be December 9th. Wisconsin gas prices are falling. AAA reports the statewide average for regular was $3.70 a gallon on Friday. That's about 60 cents lower than a month ago. Some stations are selling gas for less than $3 a gallon. Experts are predicting prices will go even lower this week. And that's the news on your locally grown radio station.
Here's your forecast from locally grown radio WFHR. 35 this afternoon, under overcast skies, northwest winds, 8 to 15 miles per hour. Overcast skies, tonight, lows level off around 15. Cloudy, tomorrow, chance of snow, high temperatures reach up to 31. Highs around 33, Wednesday, under partly cloudy skies, 34, Thursday. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki. Currently, it's 34.
At asgoeswisconsin.com or wherever you find podcasts. So last week, I bookmarked this because I knew that I wanted to take time to read it. But Natalie Eilbert, who published a story that she's been working on for since June, that looks into the fact that minors in Wisconsin need approval for physical and mental care and basically don't have any recourse if their parents refuse. And I think for a lot of us who have very loving parents, the situation that arises where your parents wouldn't want what's best for you or to provide care doesn't always seem top of mind, but there are a lot of people who are under 18 who that is not the case for in Wisconsin. And she highlights a lot of those stories, both the specific ones and larger trends. And so thank you so much for joining us to talk about this today, Natalie.
Thanks so much for having me, Kristen.
So let's just summarize kind of the bigger issue right now that you found and what like prompted you to look into this further.
Yeah, so it kind of fell into my lap last year when I was interviewing House of Hope, which is a shelter, a homeless shelter and support program support place up in Green Bay. And Beth Hudak, who works for House of Hope, mentioned the frustrations she's experienced with trying to get homeless unaccompanied youth the care that they need. And what it means to be unaccompanied is your parent or legal guardian isn't in the picture. That could be a result of their being homeless themselves. They're incarcerated. You fled home because of it being unsafe, or you were kicked out. With these minors in particular, if something happens to them, they just don't have any recourse, whether it's trying to seek a prescription, get an x-ray done on a broken bone, have something fixed that they need fixed, like a broken leg, or, access to a therapist for the years and years of trauma they've experienced. All of those under Wisconsin law require a signature from a parent or legal guardian. And again, sometimes that's really difficult for, doctors and hospitals providers to obtain. Sometimes it's just, the parent or legal guardian refuses to sign the document that would give consent to providers taking care of these minors. So that's how I got involved, because I went into it with skepticism. I didn't think this is possible, that kids could experience such neglect from both their parents and then surrounding systems. But what I learned from talking to young people is indeed there are these really dangerous barriers to care.
And I think, because I want to break this down a little bit further as far as the estimated number of minors experiencing homelessness, and we could walk through a little bit more of the different definitions, but the homelessness of minors in Wisconsin alone is potentially approaching 20,000. Because there's at least in your article, it said the last kind of like hard number was from 2019, 2020, which obviously was when everything started to get upended with COVID. And that was 17,000. But estimates now said it could be up to 20, which is.
That's right.
It's an enormous number for a fairly small state.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that it is surprising until we think about what homelessness means. It's not always living in a tent on the street, although that does happen. These are kids who are couch hopping. They're what's called doubling up. They're living with families. They're, in and out of homeless shelters. There's just so many different ways that someone can be homeless, whether they have a roof over their head or not. Mm-hmm. If they don't have consistent care at home, if they don't have a home to return to, if they don't have a reliable adult in their lives or a legal guardian, their whole life can be so easily upended.
And so that, I think, is sometimes a situation as far as separating out the definitions, because I think for a lot of us, sometimes when we think of homelessness, we think of people living on the streets, whether it's adults or minors. And one of the things I think is important is even reframing the definition or using things as adjectives versus nouns, and saying someone who's experiencing homelessness, because it is sometimes they're couch hopping, they're living in a car, they have a spot until they don't have a spot. And so is that what you found more of as far as the minors between, I think, the House of Hope, Project 1649 and different homes that are trying to be a safe space for minors who are trying to get out of a bad situation at their house, but don't have, let alone the legal knowledge of what is available to them, but even, you know, the wherewithal is being a 16-year-old trying to figure this all out.
Yeah, and an important distinction is that a lot of most, I would say a majority of homeless shelters in Wisconsin don't have licensing to take care of kids younger than 17. There's only two in the state that will even accept 0 to 17-year-olds. And that, you know, a lot of places like Project 1649 are working to change that, though right now they can only shelter young people between the ages of 17 and 21, I believe that's the number. But so there's a lot of limitations for who can find shelter and what's legally possible. I know that, you know, a lot of young people who are homeless, have parents who are extremely young too. So their House of Hope is one of the few places that accepts, teenage mothers who are homeless, and that's a whole other situation too. But yeah, it's all, it's a big mess right now when it comes to taking care of young people.
Well, we're talking to Natalie Eilbert, who is a mental health reporter for the USA Today Network in Central Wisconsin, and about her piece that she, that was published last week on the lack of recourse for minors who are need care but don't have a parental unit to sign off, because in Wisconsin you need your parents to agree for you to receive both physical and mental health care. And so I guess, not that I would imagine to know much about the you know, child health services system and when it's foster care and the state getting involved, but it feels like there's a negligence with at least one of the stories you wrote about in your piece, is a young woman who had a broken leg and her father refusing her to get care, and the long-term ramifications that will happen from that, as far as her leg not healing correctly, but truly the doctor's hands in that case are tied. And I guess my question is, how is that not negligence? How is that something that the state doesn't end up getting involved in?
It's so complicated. So one way to think about this is from the perspective of Wisconsin law. It's completely legal. There aren't laws that would say neglecting to sign that type of paperwork is abuse. Of course it is. It can be. But that has to go through a bunch of different people, right? Like, if the CPS, Child Protective Services, get involved at that point, a lot of kids actually don't want to have their parents in the system. They don't want to be in the system. You know, it's a question of what can... If the parent or legal guardian refuses to get care for this person, to take care of them, who's responsible? There's no one who can say, that can stand up and say, I will do it. I mean, there are cases where people, like, you know, doctors may decide, you know, I want to take care of this person anyway, and they'll reach out and do the proper, take the proper steps, but it may not be in their control. Hospitals right now are really at overcapacity. It's really hard to keep everything straight. And a lot of times it's a difficult calculus for doctors to get involved in something that is, again, technically legal.
Natalie, I just want to clarify so I can wrap my head around this. So an abusive parent could dislocate their child's arm and then elect not to have that treated. And unless Child Protective Services is called in by someone, that's fine.
I wouldn't say fine. And you know, I don't know the extent to which someone, I mean, that is abuse. That is physical abuse. So if someone actively breaks the arm of their child, that, you know, police may get involved with that. And then it's not in the hands of doctors anymore. There are legal issues involved with this. I imagine that a doctor may feel obligated to make a phone call, but it doesn't always happen, as in the case of this one girl who, because her father didn't sign, she had to go home and the doctors felt terrible. I think she was taken care of by Project 1649. They were able to do what they could for her. They worked with case managers, they worked with, they confided goal, but it's really complicated. And again, not everyone wants to, you know, wants those charges pressed. People don't want to be put into the system, because once you're in the system, it's really hard to get out of it. So it's more complicated than simply having, you know, CPS intervene. It's more complicated than simply having a parent reported for child neglect. There's a lot of other steps that are going on here.
This was the quote that I pulled out that I feel like is kind of the crux of what the story is. And so it's a story that serves as a metaphor for Wisconsin's current medical system where minors are concerned. Not meeting the medical needs of young people can lead to permanent damage, whether the issue at play is as visible as a broken leg or as invisible as mental health disorders. Because that was one of the other stories you featured as part of the report, is not only access to a therapist, but access to meds that are needed. And really the ability to, whatever the mental disorder or condition that you're trying to live with as a young person, knowing that you need that and still needing your parents to sign off on it, and how much long-term damage that can create.
Yeah. And, you know, that brings to mind the story of Desi, who's the main character in some ways of this tale. If you look at that case, it has all the ingredients of neglect, right, and abuse. And yet still, just to answer your question a little bit farther, Jane, that father still has rights to her medical care, even though he has a huge, like a staggering police record, even though he has been reported to the police before and Desi was the only one seemingly acting like an adult, he still can sign off on her care. You know, she told me that she recently, in my last phone call with her, she actually had broken or strained her wrist, and she was just taking care of it herself, because the alternative is she has to contact her father again. And when you've been abused by somebody, you don't want them in your life, and she doesn't want him in her life. So she's willing to, you know, elevate her arm and do what she needs to do.
All right. Well, we're going to take a quick break, but still have you come back and talk more about what resources available and what legislation has been even proposed to amend this. Our guest is Natalie Eilbert, who is a mental health reporter with USA Today Network Central Wisconsin. Stay with us. This is As Goes Wisconsin. 'Cause you said forever.
Together, we can turn a stairwell into an ER at a moment's notice. Together, we can turn a rescue ship for refugees into a maternity ward. Together, we can vaccinate 710,000 people in just 11 days. Together, we can deliver medical care where the need is greatest. Together, we are Doctors Without Borders. Doctors Without Borders goes where others don't, to provide life-saving medical care to people caught in crisis situations around the world. Learn more at doctorswithoutborders.org.
Do you worry about how much someone drinks?
Do you feel angry or depressed most of the time? Do you feel neglected or unloved?
Do you feel that if the drinker loved you, she or he would stop drinking?
If you answered yes to any of these questions, you are not alone.
Not everyone trapped by alcohol is an alcoholic.
Families and friends are suffering too.
Al-Anon and Alateen can help.
Call 1-866-200-0223 or visit alanon.org/help.
What's your favorite thing about a good movie? What makes the perfect song? And what's it about the first lines of a book that will snatch our attention? If these questions intrigued your artsy interest, you don't want to miss Director's Cut on WFHR every Sunday night from 8 to 9. Your WFHR program director, James, and head of production, Seth, will be diving into the local arts and entertainment, hot topic movies, hidden gems, and more. Audience feedback and requests are encouraged for this fun and open conversation about art in all its forms. It's artists supporting artists in their own words.
From Wisconsin Rapids to Stevens Point, your news talk and sports is on 97.5 FM, locally grown radio. Streaming at WAUKradio.com.
What would you think if I sang out a tune? Would you stand?
Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry. Our guest this half hour is Natalie Eilbert, who is a mental health reporter for USA Today Central Wisconsin. And we were talking about her fantastic piece that was published last week, talking about that in Wisconsin, minors need approval for physical and mental care from their adult, their parents. And for a lot of minors, that is detrimental. And there is not a lot of recourse for them to be able to get the care that they need if they are in a situation where their parent is not the parent that many of us have as far as wanting what's best for us. And so as you've been researching this, what was the background? Because we're one of 16 states that this is the how our laws are set up to protect, I imagine, minors. And so what is the argument for this law?
Yeah, so there's a bunch of reasons why, and I can't speak to the other 15 states, but in Wisconsin, there is this law, Defense of Infancy. And Defense of Infancy has really good intentions. You don't want a 15-year-old signing a credit card contract and then suddenly their credit is messed up. And, you know, that's a really great example of why you would want to intervene as a parent. But like any law, there's a lot of hubris in this, because once you prevented a minor from signing a contract, they can't open a bank account, which is really harmful if you are on your own and you don't have anybody. You can't sign medical records, as we were talking about. It's really hard to, you know, get any kind of independent stability if you are unable to sign a contract. I mean, think about all the ways that you sign contracts in a given day, and then realize if you couldn't sign that, you'd be in trouble, right? Mm-hmm. So these are the limits if a kid is, or a minor is experienced, or they don't know who their legal guardian is at some point. You know, they've been in the system, they've been thrown around. A lot of kids have been couch surfing for so long because of negligent parents or legal guardians that, you know, when it comes time to get the signature they need, they have no idea who it is they even need to reach out to. So that becomes a really huge problem when you're desperate for care.
And so has there been legislation, or is there anyone in our state legislature who is sponsoring, proposing amendments to this, or where are we as far as, because it sounds like, as far as what I interpreted from your report, the only recourse to this problem is a legal one, is actually changing the laws.
Yeah, that's a way. Yeah, that's I think the biggest thing to get over. This would be a huge hurdle that would no longer be there. You know, in 2019, House of Hope, who we've been talking about, the organization was able to pass Act 22, which allowed 17-year-olds to be admitted to adult homeless shelters. That allows for that specific group to get they can go into a homeless shelter and volunteer to be admitted, and they're given all the treatment of an adult who is experiencing homelessness. But because of the law, they still can't access medical bills rights, really medical autonomy in general. So one of the laws that was proposed was a safe harbor law. And this was, you know, and safe harbor means essentially that those who are experiencing sex trafficking, victims of sex trafficking, aren't treated as criminals in the adult or juvenile courts. We know that sex traffickers are, you know, stalking or finding, you know, they're finding young people, and they're taking them, and they're forcing them to do things against their will. And if law enforcement intervenes, that is when they're treated like adults. It's when they commit a crime. In 2020, the safe harbor law to amend this criminal act died in committee. So this was supposed to take away this discipline or punitive part of what, you know, this victim is experiencing. Without this amendment, a lot of victims of sex trafficking don't come forward because they don't want to face the legal repercussions. They get trapped in a cycle. And then the other law right now that died in committee, or proposal that died in committee, I should say, would have allowed the window of consent in Wisconsin to reflect the federal window of consent when it comes to getting kids into a homeless shelter. So children and adolescents who are under 17 right now in Wisconsin, if they end up in a homeless shelter and that shelter is licensed to take them, they have to get consent of the parent or legal guardian. And a lot of times it isn't because the parent is neglectful. It's that they're homeless themselves. Mm-hmm. So trying to track down where this parent or legal guardian is can take more than 12 hours. Federal consent windows have this at 72 hours. So, you know, if we can't find you know, the parent to consent or the legal guardian to consent to a child or adolescent being at a homeless shelter, they essentially get kicked out. So that's another thing that can be done. That bill also, or that proposal also died in committee. So both of those things happened in 2020, which makes sense because, I mean, there was the pandemic and there was a lot going on. But
there wasn't a lot of work that year.
Yeah. So that's definitely something that, you know, people can make, like, be aware of is that if you talk to your representative, you can make sure that these bills are put forth again. But, you know, the other thing that people can do is to say, like, we need to change this we need to get rid of this defense of infancy law or revise it so that children and adolescents can obtain their own medical rights if they need it, if they have no other choice.
Well, thank you so much for your reporting on this. It's so important, and it seems like you've started a conversation for more people to know about this, talk about this, and actually look for solutions for these minors and having them have more autonomy. So, Natalie Eilbert, thank you so much for joining us today. She is a mental health reporter for USA Today Network, Central Wisconsin, and we'll have you back soon.
I'm Nyheim Hines, running back for the Indianapolis Colts and proud supporter of the Muscular Dystrophy Association. My mom was diagnosed with muscular dystrophy when I was 14, and I watched her struggle. but MDA helped her get the best treatments and care. And they also help kids like my buddy Ethan.
My name is Ethan and I'm 12 years old. Thanks to the Muscular Dystrophy Association and people like you, I have more hope than ever before. From day one, they've treated me like family at my local care center. MDA is the only one that funds over 150 care centers across the U.S. to help provide state-of-the-art care for adults and kids like me.
For over 70 years, MDA has been transforming the lives of people living with muscular dystrophy, ALS, and other related neuromuscular diseases. They fund the research for breakthrough treatments, care, and cures. And MDA provides support to thousands of families like mine and Ethan's in communities like yours. Thanks to MDA, kids and adults can live life to its fullest. Join us and learn more.
WFHR Wisconsin Rapids, 1320 AM and W248DE, broadcasting at 97.5